from stpetecatalyst.com.
It's June 11th, and I'm here with Chris Steinecker on Chambers Insight into the Economic Impact of the Coronavirus, which we need to continue to it's tough.
Can we talk for a second, Joe? I'm nervous, buddy. And I know it's Thursday, and we've got a lot to be thankful for, and I'm very appreciative of everything that's going on in our community because there's a lot of good announcements. But the data is not looking good about our health, guys, and it's something that I think I want to send a warning bell to everybody. And let me just start with the numbers first, Joe, and then we'll talk about it.
And just, you know, a little stats are from a sample size, right? So everybody, there's a lot of back and forth and logic on, well, they're testing more people, so the numbers are going to go up, and then really it's the percentage, and the percentage is staying the same. But this is just a sample size. This is representative of, you know, if we're testing 1% of the population, and this is the number, sort of by definition, multiply that to by 100 to get what 100% of the population would be. And that changes a little bit because you're going to test people with symptoms, and so they're going to be more likely to be positive. But, you know, don't get too locked up into the back and forth within the sample. Realize it is just a sample.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think people are starting to realize some of that now, but so here's where we're at. We posted the new numbers for today, Joe. Biggest in the state, biggest in Pinellas County, average on a 14-day average. It's 38.6. You know, you and I remember when that was half of that when we started looking at that. So, and you saw that increase going on. So let's just dig into that. So here's that 14-day average, that daily average. And I put it from April 1st again, just to show you that was our peak. And then this little icon to me is just a phase one opened up. So we opened up at the right time. We thought things were going the right direction. We anticipated somewhat of a spike. And then we anticipated it to come back down. So that's what we did. And around that time, we decided to go to phase two based on the data. And then phase two hit, as well as our protesters and the community coming out. You got yourself a situation now where literally you are in a place we've never been in Pinellas County. And it's leaps and bounds bigger. And so that was our concern. And now the concern is, are these people getting the right kind of treatment? Because God forbid, if you or I want to go in there, or any of our neighbors or friends or family, will they get treated? And so before I show you the hospital bed numbers, this is what posted to, for yesterday's number. It's at 4.6, obviously higher than anything we've seen, Joe, since you and I have been talking about it. We've now seen a couple, this week we've seen a 4.3 and a 3. When a long time ago we were just looking at ones and twos, we're seeing double the amount of percentage. And I get it. Now, this is what you're saying, is a lot of people being tested. So you can look at that. But this ratio of 4.6, if this continues, guys, we may not be able to continue opening up the economy we have, and we may have to put some restrictions on that. And because of these leading indicators, people are saying they feel sick. It went back up, and it hasn't gone back down. And now you see this tick up here, down here in the bottom left corner, about people coming into the emergency room. This spike here is what we're worried about. This could be some of those folks who are active over the last 10 days in our protests that now have started to feel like they might be getting something. The beds are my concern, is like, because this is all about, can you take care of me if we get sick? The numbers in the middle are yesterday's numbers. So you can see we had 25% of our beds. Today we have 24. This is the number that kind of concerned me, and this is what we have to pay attention to, is intensive care unit beds. Had 88 of them yesterday. We've got 70 of them today. So that we took down 18 of them in one day, and you can see that yellow in the middle increase. That's the COVID. So this is the first day that I've had this data that I've seen this happen. So, we had a big spike, and what the hospitals tell me, and because I say, well, it's only young people getting sick, so maybe it's okay, and they're like, no, Chris, you don't realize that was one group, 18 people. You can do the math. How many more 18s are in 70? If you did three or four more days of just what happened yesterday, and I'm not saying you are, but if it did, you would run out of beds in three or four days. So we hope that this was an anomaly today. But I would be nuts to say, I've seen us out in the streets. I've seen how active our bars and restaurants are. I've seen how active our protests are. Why would I think this number would go down? So that's why I'm trying to tell everybody, wearing the mask probably isn't enough right now. I'm going to add my second slide in here of keep your flocking distance too. I don't know if you guys saw Dr. Fauci last night just showing people that the efficacy of masks and screaming and yelling, they have no proof that it actually helps. So you are not safe. So social distancing as much as a mask will assist you when you're in those really, really large crowds of people. But gosh. That data does not look good, Joe. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, and then, you know, if you look back, we're doing a 14-day average, and it's at 38 now, but there's nothing below 40 in the last 7 days, including that insane 124. We literally went from 50, which 50 alone is well above the 38 that we're that worried about. But if we see another day of, you know, over 100 tomorrow, then, I mean, that's getting into, you know, the red zone. I don't want to be, you know, it's not about being dramatic, but you know it's going to be time for some change. Also, want to remind folks that the guidance is there. You have your own personal choice, so you can be as conservative as you feel comfortable being, you know, and do so because. And I think something I mentioned in a past episode is just keep that perspective, right? I think people get stuck into the micro of, you know, should I wear a mask? Should I not wear a mask? And at the end of the day, doing it, you know, it. The risk far outweighs the little reward, and I think sometimes in conversation the rewards get amplified, you know, disproportionately. So here, there's plenty of good life to be had at home. There's plenty of good life to be had social distanced. There's plenty of good life to be had with a mask on, and you know, given what's at risk, even if the you know there's it's overblown or even if it's whatever, it's just, there's just not a big cost to just being safe here and to keep that perspective.
Yeah. But there's a big expense if we don't. So
big expense if we don't.
Yeah. So thank you for that. So I just want everybody who's watching, please talk about this at least, and then feel from your friends and family, what you're going to do about it. What personal responsibility are you going to take in this? And that's a personal choice, but I know what my choice is. I'm wearing a mask. I'm keeping social distancing. I'm asking my family and staff to do the same, and hopefully we'll get through this. So, but let's talk about our entire community. And so what I'd love to do is we haven't had Jacqueline Boland in yet, and Jacqueline represents the Hispanic Outreach Center. And she is working with me on so many of our issues. I just wanted to make sure she had a chance
Jacqueline.
To talk. There she is now. Jacqueline, how are you?
Good. How are you, Chris?
Great. Hey, before I ask you to introduce yourself, I was just talking to Joe about the data numbers, and they don't look good for the day. In fact, they're the worst numbers we've ever posted about our health and COVID. And so we had just talked about that. So I may ask you a little bit about that as we go as well. So I just wanted to make sure you're caught up on what we were talking about. But before I get going, just tell people who you are.
Sure. I'm Jacqueline Boland, and I'm the CEO at the Intercultural Advocacy Institute, and we operate the Hispanic Outreach Center in Pinellas County.
Great. And just tell me a little bit of, you know, how long you've been doing it, and what do you guys do?
I've been at the center for 2 years now, and really the center started back in 2001, and really in collaboration with the Clearwater Police. And that was because they saw a need, they saw a growing Hispanic community in Clearwater, and they wanted to be able to communicate with them and speak their language and speak Spanish and also give them other services. And that's really how the center started, which I think in this day and age is something that's so important to highlight, that community policing and partnerships and collaboration and having that trust and relationships that have been built over 20 years has really been essential to us and in the community here in Clearwater. And so the Hispanic Outreach Center is really a one-stop shop, bilingual, multi-service center for anyone in the county who is Hispanic, speaks Spanish, and needs assistance. We really help with anything. We can help people if they are victims of crime, if they need help with mental health, with legal services. We partner with people all over the county, but really what we are is offering a space and a place where anyone can come and feel welcome to speak in their language, to be heard, and to know that they're going to get help with whatever that is.
Great. And so how large is your operations? Like how many staff do you have?
Yeah, we are 8 full-time staff, 1 part-time, and we're split across 2 offices. Actually, we have our office in Clearwater, and we have another site in Tarpon Springs on the St. Petersburg College campus. And so we in the past have been more North County, but we are open now to the serve anyone in the county. But of course, that's a little hard just with transportation and the community that we serve, because we do serve mainly an immigrant population who speak Spanish, who rely on public transportation, or maybe are low income and can't necessarily afford gas to go all the way from Pinellas Park or St. Pete up to Clearwater. So so that's really our operations is Clearwater and Tarpon Springs.
So tell me about the population you serve. We in the 60 days I've been doing the show, I have not talked about the Hispanic population. So give people an understanding. I understand it's the largest population, a growing population, fastest growing population in Pinellas County, but help people understand who you serve.
Sure. So when the center started in 2001, the Hispanic population in Pinellas County was at just under 5%. And now we're in 2020. So 20 years later, it has doubled. It is 10%. So that is pretty significant, I think, in terms of growth. And a lot of that actually, Unite Pinellas has put out their data profile on Pinellas County. And what was really interesting in that is that most of the growth is from US born, from people who, you know, were born here in Pinellas County and are Hispanic Americans. And I think that's something that's really important, that now those are the students that are going to be in our high schools and our colleges, graduating, getting jobs in our community. And we need to be paying attention to that as we go forward and as the community continues to grow, because it's not just Clearwater. There are pockets, you know, around Pinellas County. And that's why we're in Tarpon Springs as well. There's a lot of work in the beaches with tourism, hotels, restaurants, and things like that is where a lot of the families that we serve, where they work, in addition to landscaping and all of that. In Pinellas County, there is a lot of jobs. And because of the tourism and our location and the industries that are here. So there also are pockets in Leoman and Pinellas Park. And that's really our next target, our next site, if you will, for our kind of expansion, is we would love to be able to be in that area and can be able to serve people in the mid-county area, because that's another big pocket where we're seeing a growth of that population. But depending on where you go in Pinellas County, the Hispanic community itself is so diverse. You have people who are, you know, from Mexico, from South America, from Central America, people who speak different kinds of Spanish, you know, people who have different dialects and accents, and people are also a mix of, you know, ethnicities, you know, and colors. So this Hispanic community, I think a lot of times people tend to lump into one bucket, but really that bucket contains so many different diverse aspects to it. And that's really why our agency is not that, we have the Hispanic Outreach Center, but as an organization, we are the Intercultural Advocacy Institute. And that's really because of who we serve. We want to give respect and recognize that it is intercultural, and it's not just one. Hispanic culture, Latino culture is not just one.
Yeah. In fact, I love when you present in our meetings, because you talk about that. It's like, we say Hispanic, but you're saying, no, there's about seven different groups I've got here at least, and more coming. Right. So I think that's really important. So through COVID, how did the population handle it? Because when you hear stories, and we talked about it at a conference and everything else, that the African-American population was affected disproportionately by COVID. How did the Hispanic community fare?
Yeah, not similarly. I mean, I think that what we've seen in terms of disparities and among racial lines has really been amplified during COVID. So you have issues of health equity, and that's very true in the COVID pandemic, because a lot of families that we serve are not necessarily in traditional insurance and healthcare and all of that. So they're usually left behind, they're underinsured, and you have that fear as well. Depending on documentation status. And even if you are, I mean, there is that fear based on our government and what's going on, the fear for that to go to receive services, put their name in federal registries. So for that reason, a lot of families have been not receiving services. So if you're not up to date on your healthcare and a pandemic hits, you're less likely, you know, to do farewell, or if you have diabetes or other issues, underlying conditions. And on top of that, you know, a lot of the families that we serve work in the hospitality industry. They're front line, you know, working in restaurants, they're working cleaning in hotels. So when everything shut down, a lot of them lost their jobs, and they don't have big reserves. They don't have savings, you know, and they're living with, a lot of people maybe in one household. So you have uncles staying with cousins, you know, maybe two families living in a small space. So on top of that, social distancing and all of that is not a reality. And I think that that's something that has been seen through the Hispanic community too, is that, you know, these things that people are saying, working from home and all of that, that wasn't a reality for the jobs that they have. They're low paying, high risk jobs that they're bringing that risk back to a house that has many people in it. So there is a lot of that going on. And the main concern right now is rent and utilities. And we're helping with that through the county with COVID cares, and working with 2-on-1 Tampa Bay Cares to ensure that families, regardless of their status, are able to have their rent and utilities paid for. That's a big challenge, and that's the biggest fear and pressure and stress point, you know, that we're seeing right now. And on top of that, you know, some of this stuff brings up trauma and you know, that mental health part of it. If they've come from countries where they've gone through, you know, food shortages and things like that, depending on where they came from, this is bringing back a whole flood of emotions that maybe they've forgotten about. So we are, we're lucky that we do have partners, Directions for Living, Suncoast, with bilingual therapists, and they're busy because, you know, parents are also having to deal with kids being at home, trying to go to work, no childcare. You know, it's very stressful. It's very intense on top of everything else that's going on.
So yeah, I feel the anxiety. Just, you're making me nervous now, and I'm not doing your job.
Yes, well, welcome to our life here. We're doing the best that we can.
That's why I wanted people to hear you. Because first of all, you're just awesome at what you do, and you're so well. You articulate the position so well. But I don't think people really understand how complicated it is, and how many layers. It's not just one thing. It's so many things you're dealing with. And then let's talk about it. You were on, you shared the panel with me on an equity amid crisis conversation. You and I were on the last panel. I took a lot of your time. It's my public apology now. I apologize for taking some
Chris,
of your time.
Don't apologize. You had such a strong, bold statement that you needed your time. Don't worry.
Well, I appreciate it. So what is, you know, how do you see, what is your statement in all this?
Yeah, and we've been talking with our board as well through all of this, because really, quite honestly, our whole vision and mission as an agency is that our vision is for a peaceful and unified and engaged society where anyone can contribute their talents free of discrimination. And that's based on race, ethnicity, gender, or religion. And I think that that is so important that that is our statement, because it doesn't explicitly say Hispanic or Latino. It says that all individuals, because we as an organization from the beginning understood that equity and diversity are inherent in all of us. And so I think I'm so proud to be a part of an organization that has had that stand since 2000, before everything has happened right now. And we have always used our space and our opportunities to bring people together and to take action and to create change and use our resources to support equality. Every year for the past 10 years, we've had a diversity conference called Embracing Our Changing Community. And it's every year in the summer. And that's exactly what we try to do, is to bring different aspects of diversity to people who might not have the time or the ability to pay for conferences, you know, out of state or anything. We do that here in our community. And so as an organization that is staffed and led and volunteered and really driven by majority of people of color from all different backgrounds and diverse cultures, you know, coming from different countries, speaking different languages, it's really important that we continue to move the needle forward and do what we can in our power to move us towards that vision that we have for a unified, peaceful, and engaged community.
Well, I know you are doing your part, and because you and I also sit as partners on Unite Pinellas, which is our effort to bring everybody together and have conversations on equity. How optimistic are you that, you know, first of all, that we have partners like each other and those that surround us and Unite Pinellas and other areas that you and I go to? What is your impression of how Pinellas County is going to get through this?
I mean, I think that it starts with, as you said, having those relationships in place that have been there, and having that trust, and having a good circle of people and people in positions of power who are able to have open and honest conversations and listen. I think that that's the hardest thing. People want to talk and want to say the right thing and do the right thing, but they often forget that you have two ears and one mouth, you know, that you need to actually listen. And so I think that it's important that if you that for Pinellas County, for everyone, for us to move forward, is that we actually take that time to sit and hear what people are saying before we jump in and move and make sure that voices are heard. Because I know that that has been a lot of the what's going on, is people feel that their voices are not being heard by the people that need to hear them. And so what I think for us to move forward is to do that and to keep having people like Unite Pinellas, like you and me and others in our circle, who have these positions and casts and streaming like you're doing, to be able to have these conversations and rally all of those that are allies, together, so that we can continue to learn and grow together. Because you, I can maybe tell you some things, you can help me with some things, and that's how we're going to do this together. So, I think that's the way that we can move it forward and to continue to not just sit and talk, but like we said, to take action and to actually find solutions that cross sectors, that cross, you know, with nonprofits, with the police, with businesses, with, you know, restaurants, whatever that is. You know, as a nonprofit, we are trying to do what we can for Taco Tuesday, you know, to support our Hispanic owned businesses. So things like that, that are not, you know, just support businesses, but here are 10 businesses that you can go and spend a dollar, you know, for a taco on, and you did something. You know, so I think that those are the small steps that we can take. Look in your own backyard and see, where are you spending your money? You know, how are you supporting? Are you going to big chains, or are you going to people in your community, in your neighborhood, in a place that you might have never stepped foot in? But now, you know, why not? So I think that that's something that everyone can do, regardless of where they are or how much money they have. You have to buy food. You have to buy certain things. So why not support the people in your own neighborhood?
The Black Lives Matter movement is huge right now, and it has been very powerful for a number of years. And has a tremendous history behind it as well, obviously hundreds of years leading up to this movement. What are the challenges and what are the opportunities for your equity advocacy in relation to you know, the size of that movement right now?
Yeah, I think there are opportunities because, as I said, a lot of with the Black Lives Matter, with the way that a lot of people and even in our organization, is that there are a lot of mixes. You know, there are Afro-Latinas, Afro-Cubans, and there are those that do cross. And when we're looking at mixes, mixed races, I think it's important that we consider that too. And that identity is something that is subjective. And so someone could have, you know, a name and identify as Black or white or Hispanic. It's up to them. And it's not us to choose, you know, based on how we see them, what they identify as. It's up to them. And so I think that's an opportunity as we get into this space and into this conversation that we've been, like I said, we've been having, but to have a bigger role in some of these conversations, because it does affect us and who we serve, because there are multiple colors of someone who is Hispanic, and there are, especially in certain, like for Puerto Rico, for example, from people from the island. I mean, there's a variety of based on your heritage. You know, are you a mix from the indigenous, from the African, you know, from the slaves, or from the Europeans? So there's so much of that mixture happening that I think it's important to us to be a part of that, and to, that we support the Black Lives Matter, and we believe that they do matter.
That's beautiful, Jacqueline. I so appreciate you. And I'm so glad you joined me today. I'm glad because now people have a resource they didn't know about if they weren't aware of you, of you personally. If you are an employer and have Hispanic employees, now you know there's a resource. If you have neighbors or friends or your family needs help, you have that now. I wanted to make sure people, we didn't keep you a secret. I know that a lot of your operations are in North County, but I know you see the opportunities in St. Pete as well as I do. And we're going to continue to work together, share information. And you did a great job today helping us. And I look forward to the days ahead together.
No, thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity to share and what you guys are doing with this cast every day. It's wonderful.
Great. Great job.
You.
Thank you.
From stpetecatalyst.com.